And it's already Tuesday. That means it's time for the Parish of the Patriots, your one-stop shop for fun, enlightening, spiritually uplifting, humorous, whatever kind of commentary, if I do say so myself. Hopefully, at the end of the day, something interesting that you'll get out of all of this. I'm recording this, by the way, on Saturday, which is my usual. I usually try to get it done over the weekend, Saturday, Sunday. Sometimes it's a little closer. Just depends what I got going, because I'm out there on my grind. I'm out here trying to make a living somehow, some way, begging on the street corners or whatever I got to do. But that's all A-okay. A reminder, if you do get something out of the show and you want to drop something in the plate, throw a little gift this way. It is very much appreciated. We do continue out of the P.O. box there on the description page for each show. At least we do until this end of this month. I do plan to go ahead and just take that off at the end of August. I will continue to have the P.O. box into next year. So you stragglers, you don't have to worry about it. But we're just going to keep on moving on with that. So with that being said, we do got a couple entries in this week's listener supporter mailbag. So let's get to that. And of course, the best listener supporter mailbag is always just a part of that has just been letting people know that, you know, hey, what you dropped in the mail did show up. There's not always a message. And right off the bat, we have that. I just have a note here that says Radio Albion on it. So I say completely anonymous from the postmark, I'll get it spit out here in a minute, was North Carolina. So I will say completely anon in North Carolina. But I do always, like I say, I like to let y'all know it comes in. Otherwise, I would get flooded with, you know, emails or, well, flooded, probably not the right term. But I would get emails saying, hey, I dropped something in the mail. Did you get it? Yes, I got it. So as always, it is very much appreciated. And finally, dear GDP, or my gross, your new host, Gross Domestic Product. GPD, this is what I get. I'm recording this show before a lot of people get up in the morning. I was talking to somebody the other day, and they said, hey, you know, give me a holler, you know, early in the morning. We'll get this done. And I said, man, you got to be careful talking to me about early in the morning, because I mean, I get up around 5 o'clock in the morning, because I'm old. I'm getting old for sure. And dude, you got to be careful, because like if you're talking to a young person and you tell a young person, you know, hey, let's do this early in the morning, I'll call you early in the morning. For a younger person, if you call them like at 9, they liable to still be in bed. They start liable to still be asleep. There's that whole difference. You talk to a young person, talk about early in the morning, they're thinking 10 o'clock. They're thinking they got up early because it wasn't lunchtime. It wasn't lunchtime yet. See, and young people, you got to be careful. You're talking to your grown daddy, you know, your daddy or your granddaddy, and you say, yeah, we'll do it early in the morning. You got to understand, he's liable to be calling you up at 6, maybe 6:30 if he decided to let you sleep in. So don't be all offended. Don't be offended when the phone rings. Grandpa's on the phone talking about, hey, you had your coffee yet? We need to get going. We got to get this fence built. We got to get out here and get this cleared out before it gets hot. Early in the morning has a whole different definition. And I'm not like one of these guys that pretends like I've always been like that. You know, problem is these young people today. Man, I remember when I was young. When I was 18, 19 years old. Saturday morning? Forget Saturday morning. If I got up at 11, you know, got up at 11 o'clock in the morning, that was doing pretty good sometimes on a Saturday morning. It always just comes with age. Yeah, don't be talking to your granddaddy, but yeah, granddaddy, I'll be over there early in the morning and I'll help you, you know, clean out the garage. Because granddaddy going to be waiting about 6 looking out there. Where that boy at? Said he's going to be here early. 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, granddaddy calling you up. Hey, where the hell you at?
Hello? Grandpa, why are you calling so early?
So early? It's already starting to get hot out there. What are you talking about early? Grandpa done been up for 4 hours. Forget already having his coffee. He's done had his coffee. Been up for 4 hours waiting on your ass. Drag out of bed. Any. First tangent. Mark it down. Okay. Anyway. Continue drinking my coffee. Dear GPD, not GDP. Been here since around September of 2016. It's hard to believe that's coming up on 10 years. Here's the least I could do for all the time you've spent helping to keep our heads above the fray. That's from Jack in Wisconsin. Thank you, Jack. Thank you for reminding me that I'm old. I appreciate it. No. Yeah, it is very much appreciated. I do mean that. But yeah, 10 years. You know, gone in a flash. Yeah, it is 10 years. Just it really does. And Mr. D, I'm inching up on 60. You know, I don't know. I always think of life as seasonal, you know. I'm definitely in late autumn. At what point do I officially declare myself in winter? It's a good question. But I'm closing in on 60. I got about another year. And you know, that changes your perspective. I mean, it's like, you know, 60 years. If you're 60 years old, and you know, you say, okay, 20 years from now, if I live another 20 years, no one's going to say you and you die. You know, if I live another 20 years and die, ain't no one going to say, oh, he died so young. I'd be 80 years old. Now, if you're younger, you say, well, yeah, but you got to understand. 10 years ago, we were doing the whole Trump train, you know, Trump's first run for office, and it was going to be so funny and trolling people that were having a meltdown, you know, the fun Trump, the actual Trump. I don't know what you want to call it. Not the clown world version that we have now, you know, 10 years ago. So halfway there. 20 years ago for someone my age. And everybody listening right now that's in my age or older, you're all sitting there nodding your heads. And 20 years ago was nothing. So 20 years from now, I'd be 80 years old or going on 80 years old. Ain't no one going to say, oh, he died so young. You become aware, you know. Yeah, I was listening to this song. I'm getting off on a tangent. We're going to have more interesting discussion if this is boring to you. But as you get older, you just can't resist the urge to talk about getting older because you're so aware of it. I was listening to that song, you know, the old Chevrolet commercial song, Bob Seger, you know, Like a Rock, the other day. And, you know, towards the end, it slows down and he says, you know, because the whole song's about how he is at 18, you know. Strong, got purpose in life. His whole life's ahead of him. And of course, as the song winds down, it slows down. And he says, 20 years now, where'd they go? 20 years, I don't know. And then I got to thinking about, well, wait a minute. I couldn't say 20, you know, I'm singing along. Luckily, nobody could hear, you know, that way I could sing along comfortably. And then, like, I hit that point, and then, like, 20 years, I'm like, wait a minute. I couldn't say 20 years. What would my version? What's my version? Doesn't hit the same. 40 years now. 40 years. Where'd they go? I don't know. 40 years. Yeah. And again, it doesn't even seem that long ago. Good thing I'm a law-abiding citizen. Because, like, any prison, at my age, any prison sentence is a life sentence. They'd basically given you the death penalty. How long are you going to be around? Anyway, enough of that. Oh, what else? But what should we do? Because as usual, there is no like show script or anything. I have random things I jot down that I think I might talk about. I mean, even as I started recording, I thought, should we talk about Trump in the food cart? You know, Trump being shuttled from plane to plane. I don't really think so. Talking about getting old. Then I got off on that. So let's just jump right off into some age-old philosophy. Let's do that. Who knows what we'll talk about next? May be something deep, spiritually related. May do a 20-minute comedy routine. I don't even know. That's what makes the show fun. Or at least it's what makes it fun for me. You all know the age-old question, because I was talking about getting old. We're talking about getting old and, you know, looking forward as you get older. It really does change your perspective. And you know, not just, you know, I know if you're younger and you listen to this and be like, quit going on about this, Grandpa. Just can we move on already? But you know, I would say to younger people to understand that perspective exists. Because, see, young people tend to do the opposite. Because you're young and you don't have that many years behind you, you think you do. But if you're in your 20s, you ain't got that many years behind you. Trust me. And as a part of that, young people, when they have a crisis in their life, you know, they tend to view it as this, like, it's a bigger deal than what it is. Because, see, the older you get, you've been through a lot of crises, some of them real. You know, some of them pretty heavy. So maybe you're talking about what you got going on. It's a big deal to you. And it seems like the older people in your life act like, you know, what's the problem, bro? You know, younger people tend to blow things up and they get swallowed up. And I want to bring this up because, you know, young people get swallowed up sometimes by crises. But trust me, you know, most of the stuff that seems like a big deal at the moment, it's not. It's really not. I know if you're going through something and you're young, you're thinking, man, this is a huge deal. And, you know, it may be to an extent. Now, I'm not minimizing people's problems or crises. I'm not sitting there blowing you off saying, you know, your troubles aren't real. I get it. You know, I really do. This, if you're young, this is just the beginning. This is what life is. A series of cycles. You know, you go along, most of the time it's just boring stuff, just routine. You know, you get up in the morning, you go to, if you wage slaving, which most people are, I spent most of my life wage slaving. You know, you go up, you get up in the morning, you go to your wage slave job, you turn your brain off for 8, 10, however many hours you got to do that, because that's the only way you can bear it. Get off of work, turn your brain back on, go home, try not to think about work. Well, if you're male, if you're a man, you know, women never turn work off. You know, well, a man goes home and most of the time he tries not to talk about work. You know, that's why a man goes home and his wife is like, well, how was work today? And it'll be like the usual. It was okay. And that's the end. Your wife goes to work and she comes home and she's going to, you know, you don't want to ask the question. And most of the time you ain't got to ask the question because she's going to tell you anyway. And it's going to be about 2 hours of rambling on about her job that you don't give a shit about. That's just what women do. Anyway, you go, you try not to think about it. You got a little time to unwind, an hour or two, depending on how much, how long of a shift you work. Eat some supper, go to bed. That's most of life. Mind-numbing repetition. Boredom. It's offset, though, with the occasional crisis. You can't pay your bills this week. You just got fired or laid off from your job. Your wife run off with your best friend, whatever. Those kind of moments. And then once in a while, and then you know what? After you get through whatever the crisis is, It's back to the boredom, back to the bore routine, the boring routine. And then you have some moments of, you know, that are highlight reels in your head. You want to enjoy those, you know, because like you never know how life's going to turn out. You know, you might, if you live long enough, you might be laid up somewhere and can't even get around anymore, but your brain still kind of functions. At least you can replay those highlight reels in your head and remember those things. You get some fun times, some joyous times. And then it's over and over and over. But the point being, young people, when they hit those cycles, you know, when you hit something bad, you know, whatever it might be, sometimes they get swallowed up by it. But trust me, it'll pass. It only becomes a life-ending thing if you end your life. I mean, it you'll get past it. Rough patch, as they say. And it comes across sometimes, sounds like the older people, they ain't taking you serious. And that ain't, most of them, that ain't what they mean. They're just trying to tell you, you're making a bigger deal out of it. Look, it is what it is. And all you can do is just weather that storm. But you will come out the other side. And again, older people don't tell you that because they don't think your problems are real. They tell you that because they're trying to tell you this ain't the end of it. I mean, you'll get over it, but you know what? Next year, they're going to be something else. When the disciples got on the ship, you know, on the boat, they were going across there. And Jesus was like, you know, and the boat, you know, they got into a storm and there's water swamping in the boat and they're in a panic. And they waken Jesus up like, hey, don't you even care that we're about to die? And Jesus is like, I would just like picture him like, why you wake me up for this? He's like, why are you, you know, he's like, why are you in a panic? Stands up and calms the storm. That's why you need your Christian faith, your perspective. Jesus calmed that storm. Gives you that perspective. From their perspective, they all fix and die. Waves crashing into the boat. They're filling up with water. Jesus laying back there in the back asleep. Not paying any attention to what's happening to them. Wake up, Lord. Don't you even care we're fixing to die? And he's like, man, you're on about a whole lot of nothing, basically, you know? Calms the storm. It's all perspective. Anyhow, that's how life works. You got your faith and you're growing and you have a purpose. And the more you grow in your faith, the more your perspective is right about how temporary these everything is. We blow it up in our heads. You got crises and things that happen in life, but all of us, every human being on the face of it, we make it a bigger deal than what it is. Not to say it may not be a big deal, but we make it a bigger deal than what it is. We just tend to do that, you know, but you can't let that get out of hand or it swallow you up. If the disciples would have freaked out and just jumped off the boat in just a sheer panic, Jesus has been having to do an unscheduled raising someone from the dead or something. You know, you got to calm down. It may be a big deal what you got going on. But understand that most of the time we make it a bigger deal in our head. I do it all the time. I'm one of the people's, it's one of my bad tendencies that I'm aware of, you know, because you got to be aware of your bad tendencies. And one of my bad tendencies is I, you know, even in trying to do the right thing and think things through, I tend to overthink them. You know, I tend to make it a bigger deal in my head because you're like weighing possible outcomes from a decision. So you're looking at the pros and the cons. And I just tend to, when I'm looking at the cons, I start making the cons almost inevitable and this huger deal than what they would ever actually be. And I'm aware of it. You know, it's just something you gotta, you're aware of it and you just wear it. You have to be aware. You have that, if you have that tendency, you have to be aware of that. Well, I have that tendency. You know, I'm blowing this up into a bigger deal. Everybody does it to a certain extent. And you just gotta be aware of it. Work through it. It's your faith, so I get you through. Anyway, this has been 20 minutes of a tangent, basically. I was thinking the other day, and I kind of jotted it down. This would give us something to start off with. We're already 20 minutes in. I'm just talking about starting off with. But I was thinking about that age-old philosophical question. You know, the age-old question, is a man born into this world inherently evil? Or is a man born into the world inherently good? This is one of those long-term, you know, that question's been debated on and off for who knows how long. You know, is a man born evil? And starts from the time he comes out of the womb, he starts having to seek redemption. Or is a man born good? And as soon as he comes out of the womb, this world starts corrupting him. That question's been debated for who knows how many centuries or whatever. I mean, it's a long, you know, people debated that question. Philosophers have debated it. And, you know, I don't want to sound ignorant. I don't want to sound ignorant or arrogant. But, I mean, I was thinking about that question the other day, so I kind of jotted it down to give me an idea of something I could jump off into that might be somewhat interesting. Is a man born into this world inherently good or inherently evil? People have gone back and forth. Theologians have argued this back and forth. Well, the Bible says this and the Bible says that. And, you know, let me tell you, the Bible says one of the key elements of the Bible, one of the key things Jesus told us is the truth will set you free. And you just step back and look at the truth. Is a man born inherently evil or inherently good? A man is born, this is my take on it, this is your GPD take on it. A man is born with two things. His genetic makeup. You are born of the genetics of your parents. You can't escape that. Genetics are genetics. You know, that's what you're born with. For better or for worse. Man is born with his genetic makeup from his parents because you're gifted two things when you're born. Your genetics, that comes from your mom and daddy and all their ancestors on each side. You're getting a little piece of that. Yes, your great, 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 great granddaddy from however many long, you know, years ago, there is a piece of him in there. I mean, it may be really small, but you're still carrying a piece of that lineage with you. That's an amazing thing, by the way. I'm already tangenting it, going off on a tangent again, but you think about it. This is why, you know, the Bible puts so much emphasis on, you know, the importance of having children. You know, it shows the different attitudes that people have today. You know, oh, well, you know, children are just like, you know, I don't know, another accessory. I can't afford them right now. You know. And I mean, I get that it's a bad economy and stuff, but whenever someone says that, it makes it sound like, you know, talking about no different than, I don't know, wouldn't you like to have a speedboat to take out on the weekend? Yeah, I'd love to have a speedboat, but I can't afford it right now. Having children goes way beyond that because it means that's how you live on when you die. That little piece of you. You know, that's why old people love it. You know, you like your grandpa always on you about when you're going to, or I'm sorry, your daddy and mama, they're always on about you about when you're going to give us, you know, when we're going to start seeing some grandbabies, you know. You finally settle down, you finally get married, and every time you go over to your mom and daddy's house or her mom and daddy's house, they always like, when are we going to start seeing some grandbabies? And you're like, why y'all on about that? Mm-hmm. I'm working on my career right now. Don't know why they on about grandbabies. Because from their perspective, that's the anchor that they're going to move on. In other words, when you have children, that's a part of you that lives on, but something could happen to them, you know? But once you see grandchildren, now a part of you has carried on for the next two generations, and you can see that. And it's comforting. You know, it's comforting on a spiritual level that a part of you now is established for two generations. That's what they're seeing from their perspective. That's why they on you about having some grandbabies. It tells them they can look and see a piece of themselves two generations now. That's how we carry on after we leave. A part of us, you know, you have people when a loved one dies, like, you know, one of your parents or something dies, and they'll say a part of them lives on in us. But that's true. Literally, you know, most of the time people say that and they mean some sort of emotional gibberish, you know, about as long as you think about them, they continuing to live. But that's not true. That's just a memory. Sentimentality. You know, I'm not, you know, yeah, of course we remember those that we lose over the years. But it's, if you're talking about your mom and daddy, somebody of blood relation, that is literally true. They are literally living on in you because you are carrying a piece of them. You know, if your mom and daddy are gone, understand that they, yes, a piece of them still lives on in you, literally, because you're carrying their genetics. That is a piece of them that is continued on now in you. And if you have kids yourself, guess what? You, a piece of your mom and daddy are still in your kids and on back through the generations. That's why it's so important in the Bible, because that is how you continue on in this world. That's how you, a part of you, continues in this world, living on, affecting this world. Yes, a piece of you could be affecting outcomes in the world 100 years from now, long after you're gone, because that piece of you that's carried on in your lineage, you know, when your genetics that are passed on will still be here when you long turned into dirt or whatever. Going on, living on. That's why it's so important. That's why so much importance is put on it in the Bible. Your genetics. That's what you get from your mom and daddy. They give that to you. Bible says to honor your mother and father. And you're like, why? You know, maybe you hate your mom and daddy or your mom or your dad. Because even if they're sorry, because they're people sorry, you know, and sometimes they have kids. You know? But the one thing they did give you, you might say, my mom and daddy never gave me nothing, but they did. They gave you your genetic makeup. You are who you are, for better or for worse. You know, sometimes part of that genetic makeup is stuff you got to overcome. You know, it could be a big hurdle because your genetics are the hard coding. You know, that's the base code that you're starting with. You can't do anything. You know, you can't do anything about what family, what parents you're born to. You had no say in that. That's why you want to be careful about picking your friends. Because you can't pick your family. You just, that's what you get. You can pick your friends, though. If you surround yourself with sorry people, sorry people, you know, that's on you. Anyway, they gift you your genetics. That's what they give you. They may not give you anything else. They may not care. They may be abusive. They may be, you know, looked upon by society as a total piece of shit, but they did give you life and they gave you your genetics. You're here because of them, for better or for worse. That's what the Bible says. You honor them. That means something. That doesn't mean deny the reality, you know, of who they are. It just means, you know, you treat them with a certain amount of, you know, understanding with that in mind. I'm not going to get off on that tangent because I want to keep going here. Now, the other thing you get is your free will. That's from God. And it cannot be taken. I mean, yes, people could, you know, the government can come and drag you and lock you up in a cage. Well, hell, you know, somebody could come up and tase you and knock you out and tie you up and throw you in a cage. But somebody could put you in a cage. And that's it. You know, people can do things against you, you know, that you have no choice in. But that's not the same as your free will. Nobody can take your free will. Nobody can take your choices away from you. People can do things to you, yes, that, you know, you don't have any ability to stop. But they can't take your free will. They can't force you to make a decision. They can make it difficult. I've long said, the different, you know, one of the ways to spot something from the devil, because there's, to me, there's two different kinds of evil, you know, two different kinds of wickedness in this world. That which is of man and that which is of Satan. And the way you can tell the stuff that's from Satan is he always wants there to be a choice. He'll camouflage it. He will give you ample opportunities to say, I had no choice, but you do. It's a really tough one. I mean, your choice may be to do this or die, but there's still a choice there. You can choose death. You look at the outcome, life outcomes, poor life outcomes. You look at the life outcomes for the vast, overwhelming majority of the apostles. You know, people look up to the saints. How do you get to be a saint? Most of them are martyred, but they had a choice. And their choice was often, you know, shut the hell up, quit preaching the gospel, quit talking about Jesus, or die. But you see, they still have a choice. Most people would cop out. They said, well, I didn't have a choice. They said, I either shut up about Jesus or they're going to kill me. I didn't have a choice, but you did. See, Satan always going to say, you did. That's how you know something's from the devil. Because he will always make sure there's a choice in there. He's going to make it tough. And in making it tough, he's also handing you that part that your sinful nature always longs for, which is justification, justifying yourself. I didn't have a choice. See, he makes it tough, hoping you'll make the wrong choice, of course. But the other side of that is he's feeding you the justification. So, you know, in your mind, you know you're making the wrong choice. But in your mind, you can say, I didn't have a choice, but you did. You see, the devil always wants you to have a choice. That's how you stand accused. And it doesn't, you know, people say the devil are going to accuse you. You know, they think of the book of Job when the devil, you know, goes before God and accuses Job. It ain't even like that. Those accusations are when you're looking at yourself, judgment, when you're facing yourself and you have to see yourself for what you really are, who you really are. The devil always gives you a choice. See, man, and a lot of times, wickedness and evil that comes just from men exercising their free will, by the way, is actually worse than that of the devil. Because at least the devil's, you know, at least Satan's stuff, I mean, there is a point to it. See, men will do wicked and cruel things just because, you know, I mean, just because. I don't know. You know, it's just people do things. You know, that's why I always say you always have free will, but always understand that other men have free will too. This gets back to, and I'm not going to beat the dead horse, you know, where people say, well, why does God allow there to be evil? If there's a God, why does he allow bad things to happen? Because God gives you, when you were born into this world, what you get from God, you get your genetics from your mom and daddy. That's what you get from the world. God gives you your free will. Other people get that too. You're not special. Everybody gets their free will. And sadly, men use their free will for evil, for wickedness, to hurt and harm other people, for cruelty, to do unspeakable and despicable things to other people, spread evil, hate, malice in this world. But they do that. If God eliminated that, he would eliminate somebody's free will. You know, most people, he shouldn't allow people like that to be like that. So that would require taking their free will. And again, if it's something given to everybody, if he were to take that, he would have to take it from everybody. Do you want to be an NPC? Do you want to go through life making no choices at all? God just decides everything for you and you're an automaton moving around. No, no. See, people want to have it both ways. They look at people using their free will for evil, cruelty, wickedness. They want God to stop that and take that away. Oh, but leave me with my free will because I'm special. either everybody gets it or nobody gets it. Okay, getting back on point here. Is a man born inherently good, inherently evil? A man is simply born into this world with his genetics given from the world, given from his mom and daddy, the physical, and his free will, which is given by God and cannot be taken away by man nor Satan. You always have your free will. Those things cannot be taken away. God will not take it away. God has a set of standards he operates by. You are born with your genetics and your free will. Now, everything else is filled in on the way. Choices you make. Now, obviously, an infant isn't making a lot of choices, are they? They ain't got no choice. There you go. An infant. Their parent, you know, their mama decides when they sleep. You know, the mama decides when the infant eats, gets a diaper changed, all of that. You start off in this world, you ain't making no choices. But as you grow, you start making choices. The older, and every choice accumulates and fills in a line of who you are and who you're going to be. It affects you, these choices. And the older you get, you're piling up a bigger and bigger list, a resume. Imagine you had to fill out a resume at the end of your life for all the choices you made. Don't think about it too much. Ain't nobody want to even think about it. Ain't nobody want to think about that. You know, facing your choices, good, bad, cringingly bad. I mean, let's be honest, we all make mistakes. So the answer is, you know, no, it's a category error. It is a man born just, he's evil, born wicked and evil into this world and starts having to seek redemption. I think it's a category error. I know you can point to Bible verses that insinuate, look, again, Jesus said the truth will set you free. So let's just step back from all of that and say, well, what's the truth? You're born with your genetics. You can't do anything about that. You know, whatever you're born with, you know, the looks you got, that's the looks you got. You know, if your mama's fat and your daddy's fat, you're probably going to fight weight gain your whole life. You're going to struggle against it. It just is what it is. And your free will. That's what you're born with. And everything else you're filling in on the way. As the decisions you make. You take your genetics and your free will, and that's what you're given. Now, let's see what you're going to do with your life. That's this whole experiment, by the way. That's this whole exercise of being in this world. You come in with your free will and your genetics. Let's see what you do with it. Just turn you loose. God does not make us NPCs. You know, God gives us, honestly, a frightening amount of freedom. It really is a frightening amount of freedom. I think that's why we view oppression, you know, when you live under an oppressive government. I think that's why it's just people hate it on an instinctual level. I mean, yeah, they're obviously, you know, the things an oppressive government does. But I mean, just on an instinctual level, people are repulsed by it. Because God gives us an immense amount of freedom. You come into this world, you're given your genetics, because you got to start from somewhere. You got a body, you got to have something to make that up. You come in with your genetics and your free will. Good luck, kid. Get after it. Let's see what you can do with it. That's how all of us, this whole thing, God created man. He created the first man, Adam. This whole exercise is essentially can be summed up that way. You come into this world with your genetics and your free will. Let's see what you do with it. And Jesus tells the parable about the guy who gives his servants different amounts of money and then leaves and comes back. See what they did with it. That's this life. That's how it is. Your genetics, your free will. There you go. Get after it. Let's see what you do with this life. Well, and generally it's a mixed bag. For most of us, it's a mixed bag. You look back, and you do that more the older you get. You look back on your life, and there's some things as you made a good decision. I think most of us, I know I have this predisposition. If you look back, I try to honestly a lot of times avoid it because I have that tendency to look back and it's like, I can forget all about, I can forget 7 good decisions and focus in on one really bad one and just, that's the one I remember, beat yourself up over. That was stupid. Why did I do that? That was a mistake. Mistakes are also a part of it as well. The Bible also warns about, spending too much time looking back. I said, don't look back on the old days and say, why were things so much better? Because if you do this properly and you're growing in the Lord and you're seeking the Lord, you come to realize that even some of the bad stuff, even your mistakes, even sins you've committed can actually play a role in getting you where you need to be now in the Lord. So you look back and say, man, I wish I wouldn't have done that. That was a mistake. Well, technically, yes, it was a mistake. It might have even been a sin. But in the grand scheme of things, you look and if you're where you're supposed to be in the Lord now, even that mistake, even that sin played a part. If you didn't do that, you might not even be here right now. I can look back at things early in my life and I think, man, that was a mistake. I shouldn't have done that. I should have done this other. That would have taken my life in a more positive direction, but that's a mistake. Because had I done that, and at the time anybody would have said, yeah, that's the way to go. All right. But had I done that, we wouldn't be sitting here having this conversation right now. Yeah, it was a sin. It was a mistake. But had I not made that sin, had I not made that mistake, wouldn't be having this conversation, wouldn't be where we're supposed to be now. It's that way for everybody. I'm not sitting here trying to act like I'm special. I'm keenly aware of how common I am. Everything works together. As long as we're working towards understanding the Lord, if we're just blowing our time on dumb stuff, worldly things, don't have no time for God, that's the real sin. That's the real wasting of your time and of your life. Now you're that servant that just buried the gold and went on about his business. And then when the master came back, go dig it up. Here's your gold back. That's what makes it. That's where you're in trouble. You're given all this freedom. Your genetics, you got your free will. And however many years you got on this world, what are you going to do with it? What you got? What are you going to have to show for it at the end of it? Because ain't no blaming nobody else. That's the part we don't like, huh? We don't like the idea that we can't. We always want to blame someone else. I always say one of the, as I said, one of the things God gives us that's absolute is free will. He doesn't take it away from us. If you look at moments in the Bible, for instance, when God directly intervenes, and they're pretty rare, even in the Old Testament, but the world was young then, and there were some more direct interventions per se. But most of the time, like when you look in the Bible, when God intervenes directly, if you boil it down to its essence, it's because men with their free will were making decisions that at the end of the day, we're not going to lead to the outcome, that God was looking for. So he intercedes directly. Doesn't take their free will. He could just take their free will and make him make the decision he wants him to make. But he doesn't. Favorite example is Peter's miraculous escape from prison. He didn't take Herod's free will away from him and so they just let him out. He didn't take the guard's free will and he'd just say, I'm gonna let you out. I don't care about what these guys say. everybody with their free will, Peter was going to be killed 100%. That was the outcome. There were, it was a dead, it was a bad end. It was a dead end, but God had things for Peter to do. So he just interceded directly, broke Peter out of prison so that his will could be done. The rest of the time, he doesn't need to do that. He sees how all the pieces are going to fall together and it all works together towards his will at the end. Anyway, that's the answer though. We just simply are. You got your free will and your genetics and however much time you've got. So you are what you, the accumulation of your decision. You know, I always get, you know, you never know. You ever know somebody in your life, and most people, most of y'all do, that just do nothing but bitch about how miserable they are, you know? And I, you know, at some point you just want to shake that person and say, well, then do something different. You know, what are you complaining to me for? I don't run your life. You run your life. Most of those people are also ones that it's always somebody else's fault. You know, it's always, it's not their fault. Somebody else's fault. Your life is the accumulation of your decision-making by and large. I'm not saying you're not affected by decisions other people make. Of course you are. But, you know, again, that's just life. Everybody running around with all this crazy freedom. In a sense, it's a spiritual anarchy. Like, all these people running around with free will, doing, you know, making their decisions and doing whatever the hell. Get crazy. Of course, sometimes people are going to bump into you. People are going to do stuff that affects your life. And then guess what? You got to exercise your free will and decide how you're going to react to that. How you're going to make that adjustment. You're barely making it, and your boss uses his free will when he's making the list of people to shit can, and your list, he chooses you for whatever reason. Justified, unjustified, doesn't matter. And now all of a sudden, you out of a job. You got to use your free will to figure out how you're going to deal with that. And on it goes. Now, we got about 10 more minutes left, so we got time. We can move into something else. I'm not going to just beat the subject to death. Well, I've been talking, you know, considering, because you got to understand, a lot of stuff I talk about, it's not like, you know, what kind of wisdom can I share today? I mean, it kind of is part of it. But we discuss things that these are things I'm thinking about right now. Most of the time, this is stuff I'm thinking about. I was thinking about 2 days ago. And I just share those thoughts. I'm working through this just like y'all. Trust me. If you're looking for somebody that's got it all figured out, you're looking for Jesus. You dang sure ain't looking for me. I'm a long way from having a fraction of it figured out. I'm figuring this out myself. Sometimes I might be wrong. I guarantee you. There's times I'm going to be wrong. It's funny when somebody jumps up, you wrong about this, that, or the other. Like, maybe I am. You know, I don't know. I'm doing the best I can. Same as anybody else. I think about things and I share it on the show. It's crazy when people get all emotional about that, you know. They hear somebody say something, they disagree, instead of just being like, I think he's full of shit, and just moving on. No, they get like an emotional stake in it. They send you an email that's like 4 pages long, and you're like, what in the hell is this? Telling you how wrong you are. The person on the receiving end of that email, they can't even wade through whatever the points are because they're still trying to answer the question, why do you care that much? But I do. I share the stuff that I'm thinking about right now. And you know, I've been talking here recently, you know, about this idea. Let me back that up a little bit to say, most of the time, the stuff I do choose to share on the show is stuff I'm pretty sure about. And sometimes I'm thinking about stuff and it could go either way. I usually don't talk about that stuff here. You know, I bring something up. It's something I'm leaning towards. That's probably pretty right. I think it's right. Not 100% guaranteed. I couldn't be wrong. But I try to be stick with stuff that I'm pretty confident in, if that makes any sense. Yeah, and that's a selfish element of the show from my perspective. Discussing these things with you is one of the ways I'm also thinking about it. Like, I'm literally thinking through these things sometimes as we, this helps me consider it, you know, verbalizing it, sharing it with y'all. So, you know, there's a selfish motivation there too. I'm getting something out of it too. Anyway, one of the things, you know, I've been discussing off and on is my belief, and I believe this is backed up by the Bible, that there are multiple different kinds of entities, if you would. And I use that term not to sound, you know, like, I don't know, paranormal or something. Just literally, there are things that we don't understand. These different entities. I don't think it's so simple as, you know, as I've said before, but just as a quick repeat, you may have missed it. You know, most Christians have this view of, you know, the entities, spiritual entities, are the Lord, angels, Satan, demons. And the demons are the angels that went into rebellion with Satan. They're demons now. I don't think that simplistic view, I mean, it's right, but it's incomplete. I do not believe that simplistic view is backed up by the Bible. And Jesus was casting devils or unclean spirits. In the King James Version, they kind of use different terms for the same thing, I believe. You know, but it says devils. And people, you know, well, what are those? What are these unclean spirits? Well, it's just, you know, when people say, and I think it's a mistake to attribute everything to what we understand now, worldly things, the science. Well, they just didn't understand at the time. It was a sickness that we understand now is caused by this, that, or the other. They just didn't know. Maybe we don't know. Well, it's foolishness in a man to ever think he's got it all figured out. You always got to be able to step back and say, you know, maybe my fundamental presumptions are incorrect. You know, that's why I'm getting the incorrect answer. Anyway, I do believe there's other entities besides just a simple four categorization. And I believe those entities, you know, influence us just by their presence. I don't think you got to be possessed like in a biblical possession sense, you know, where an apostle got to cast it out of you type of thing. But I just think being around them, you know, influences us. You know, these entities around, you know, we know, look, if you're a believer, you know from the Bible that Satan's been cast down into the world, into the temporal realm with us. Where is he then? You know, is he masquerading around as a human being? Now, you know, these other entities are out of phase with us. We can't see them, but they're around us. I do believe that. I think an interesting thing to consider, you know, and I'm not one of those guys, I'll sit here and whip it out in Mark chapter, because a lot of these things I assume y'all understand. And when Jesus was explaining he was going to go to the cross, he was going to have to be sacrificed and go through what he had to go through. And Peter, you know, stands up and said, no, you ain't. You think we're all going to stand around and let you do that? And Jesus looks at him and says, what? Get behind me, Satan. Let me ask you something. Who's Jesus talking to? Peter? Was he calling Peter Satan? It sounds insulting. That's how a lot of people see that. He made Peter feel bad because he would call him Peter the devil himself. No, he wasn't. I believe he was literally talking to who he addressed. Think about the importance of this. When Jesus would cast out an unclean spirit, a devil, whatever term the translation uses, what would he do a lot of times? First thing, he would ask them, what's your name? You know, remember, in the context, especially in the Bible, asking someone their name, it's asking who they are. Not just, you know, oh, I'm Bob down the street. The down the street is more important than the Bob thing. You're saying who you are. When they asked Jesus, who are you? He didn't say Jesus. He said the way, the truth, and the life. Who you are. Jesus would, a lot of times, when he would run into these entities that had taken up residence, because you get too comfortable with them, they can literally take up residence in there with you. But anyway, he'd ask them, Who are you? What's your name? Who are you? Jesus would address them directly. Why does that matter? Why do we think Jesus was calling Peter Satan? Peter wasn't Satan. He was the rock that Christ chose to build the church on. So why do we read that and just assume Jesus was being insulting towards Peter and calling him Satan? I think the answer is, when he said, "Get behind me, Satan," he was literally talking to Satan. Peter wasn't possessed by Satan, but maybe he was being influenced just because he was in the area. These entities, these various, and I believe there's a lot of different ones that we don't understand because we have a very limited view of the, shall we say, spiritual realm, the things that exist outside of our temporal understanding, if you would. And if we're surrounded by these entities and they have the ability to influence us, just influence us, they gotta possess you. They can just influence you. You know, you ever had a situation you look back on and maybe you reacted to a situation, an interaction with a person in a manner that afterwards you look back and you're like, why did I do that? You know, why did I get so upset? Why did I fly off the handle? They didn't even say that much. You ever done that? Trust me, you live long enough, you will. And you wind up, you can't make no sense out of your own decisions. You know? Out of the way you reacted. You reacted in a manner that when you look back on it, you still are like, this didn't make any sense. I don't understand why I did that. Well, maybe you were in the vicinity that, I'll say your free will was taken from you. You were being influenced. You know, maybe there was some sort of entity of some sort just in the ballpark of you, and it influenced you just by their mere presence. There's a story. It's not just a conspiracy theory because it's fairly well documented to have happened. I mean, the government has covered up. I know we're going off here. We're going to get back on point here in a minute. But you know how like soldiers have night vision glasses, you know, goggles, and most time when you see them, you know, they're what? They're like green or like red. Something like that. You know, you see pictures of soldiers wearing the night vision so they can see in the dark. One of the first versions of that, they tried out in Vietnam. And they were like blue. And I don't remember, I can't remember off the top of my head what they were made of. Some of y'all are familiar with what I'm talking about. Y'all know. But they did. They made these and they were like a blue tint. But they were made with this special thing. And I can't remember again. I can't remember what it is. Anyway, they made these and gave them out, some of them, to try out how they work, you know, and these guys were going on like night patrols and stuff, and they had to immediately recall them because like guys were flying on, you know, hanging out the gun door like you'd see, you know, in the old Vietnam movies, and they would just start lighting off the machine gun. People were like, what the hell are you doing? And they had them goggles on and they were seeing all kinds of crazy shit. And it's not like it's just one dude. There were multiple instances of these guys freaking out and seeing all these creatures and different entities. And they didn't know what they were. And they just start lighting off rounds into the dark, shooting nothing. People looking at it, they ain't got the glasses. They're like, what the hell are you shooting at? He's like, don't you see that thing flying at us? What thing are you talking about? Now, there may be other explanation for it, but that just as an idea. That we could actually be surrounded by all sorts of various entities which have the potential to influence us. Now, I was thinking what I wanted to get to, the point of this, is I was considering the other day this idea of influence. Because you look at the news. They constantly, talking about influencing us, this is in the same vein. Pay attention to the news. Once in a while, don't pay a lot of attention to it because it's all bullshit. But look at the way everything is always described. Everything in this, they tell us, they tell you, the media. It's always everything between the media, the government, same thing. They want you in a constant state of discomfort, agitation, you know, mental instability. The network news comes on TV. As you know, I watch 90 seconds of it in the morning. That's the summary. I call it, you know, your 90 seconds of narrative. This is just so I know what today's narrative is. But the thing you always notice, or really came to mind the other day, because, you know, look at the way they frame everything. They never say, wow, we've had a lot of rain in the Midwest. Homes are being flooded. Here's some footage of it. Mm-mm. It's always deadly, disastrous, agitating you. By the time this airs, early last week, but early in the week, you know, they had a big earthquake in Colombia. Buildings collapsed and media is all over it. Deadly, deadly. They didn't just say, oh, well, there was an earthquake and they're believed there are going to be multiple fatalities. No, look at the wording. The deadly earthquake in Colombia. Disaster, deadly, unprecedented. And then like 2 days later, they moved on to the next thing. Deadly, disastrous, horrible, world-changing floods. Catastrophic. What is that? It's to influence you. They want you. Quit watching the news. You could be aware of the news, but quit taking it in. Because one of the things they're wanting to do is influence you. And there is a spiritual element if you get what I'm saying. If you don't get what I'm saying, I'm not going to have time to really sit here and just keep beating it to death. It's about getting you in a constant state. They want you in a constant state of upheaval. Now, from a worldly standpoint, they want you in that state because people are easier to manipulate. At some point, the mental and spiritual stress becomes so much that people agree to anything if it'll just stop. COVID was an extreme example of that. You know, but the same applies on the spiritual side of it. I think I'm about convinced that to some level or extent, some of these entities literally feed off of that energy, you know, off of this anxiety and fear that they feed off of it. And you see people get emotionally whipped up. And again, it's intentional. Media, what they put on TV, listen to the way they frame this stuff, because we get so accustomed to it, you don't even notice after a while, but pay attention. Why does it always have to be deadly, unprecedented, historical? I don't know. You know, why is it a heat dome now instead of just summer? It always cracks me up whenever they talk about, you know, this is the hottest summer, and bullshit. The hottest summer was 1980. I remember it. This is the hottest summer ever. Really? Has this paid actor on your TV that's reading a script to you behind a desk, have they been around forever? How do they know? They're counting on you not asking. It's the hottest summer ever. It ain't even the hottest summer in my lifetime. What do you mean forever? The hell out of here. 1980, that was the hottest summer in my lifetime. It's the hottest summer, but it's always constructed that way. Unprecedented, historical. This has never happened before. Bullshit. Nothing new under the sun. Trust me. It's a disaster. Deadly. You know, one of the worst things I think you can do is watch this stuff and fall for it. You know, like I say, I watched the 90 seconds of it, just see what kind of line of shit they hand in everybody this week. That's or that day, because it changes day by day. And that's it. I won't come out with an emotional or spiritual upset. You know, this is deadly. It's unprecedented. It's a catastrophic disaster. I got to feed them things. They get the hell away from me. They go find somebody else to leech off of. I ain't got enough energy for all that. And neither should you. Whether you're looking at it, don't be manipulated by the media. Because, again, a people that are in a constant state of emotional and spiritual upheaval, at some point, they'll agree to anything just to make it stop. And don't go along with it on the spiritual. You know, again, and you see, you have a choice. You can turn that shit off. Quit going back for more and more. It's not necessary. You know, I'm probably would realistically consider myself more well informed about current events than the average person. And you would laugh at how little time I spend on that. You know, it doesn't take a lot. Most of it is just, you know, starting off with discarding whatever the mainstream narrative is, because you know that's a lie. Then you find some sources that are fairly realistic, reliable. I mean, people can be wrong. You can't put too much faith in one man. But, I mean, you know, find some sources that, you know, these is pretty right most of the time. You know, read some international versions of news, get a different side of the story. You know, like I say, most people laugh at how little time I spend on current events. It's what you don't spend time on. The media that's lying to you, keeping you in a state of upheaval so you can be manipulated. And like I say, I think some of these entities literally feed off of some of that emotional, spiritual negativity. And it could be, like I say, that can be a downward spiral, but I recommend against it, unplug from all of that. I think social media plays a big part in it as well. I think it's a very destructive thing, and most people want to get away from that. But anyway, we need to wrap up. I wound up running a little long. I had some time to fill and wound up going way long with it. So we got to wrap up on that note. Appreciate you tuning in this week. Hope you got something out of the show. I certainly got something out of having the discussion with you. And again, I appreciate all of you tuning in. Hope you enjoy the rest of your week. And as always, I hope to see you back here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.